will be self-contained, but part of the motivation for the talk will be from the conference. And there's no way I can give an hour's talk and give up the motivation and like even give an outline of a theorem. But it will be self-contained from a mathematical standpoint. It's an outline for myself, but the first two parts of this are just going to be kind of geometric background, kind of combinatorics and geometry of Riemann surfaces. So it won't be until I get to the main theorem that I talk at all about dynamics. Let's begin here. So let S be a compact Riemann surface. With boundary, let's give a few definitions here. So a path on S for our purposes is a proper embedding let me call it A from some interval, say 0, comma, 0, 1, or whatever. Say I, comma, boundary I, where I is a closed interval, to S, comma, boundary S. Okay, such that A of the interior of I lies in the interior of S. All right. Partial proper foliation on S is a foliation of an open subset of S such that every leaf is the image of a path. Right, so it's basically going to look like this is S. A partial proper foliation might look something like this. We just choose some open subset of S, and we're just going to have some foliation so that all the leaves are just these properly embedded intervals. Right, and we'll get back to why we're using these a little bit. So a little more combinatorics. An arc on S is a path up to isotopy. All right, I'll say an arc alpha is a path up to isotopy, so it's just some path, and we're allowed to move the endpoints freely. Right? And alpha is equal to the isotopy class of A if A is a representative of alpha. Okay, nothing very exciting. Two arcs are disjoint if they have disjoint representatives, and we let A of S, which you can think of as the R complex, or the what you might call the abstract R complex. Namely, all finite sets of disjoint arcs. All right, of mutually disjoint arcs. So if I want to say that alpha is an arc on S, I'll say that the set containing alpha is in this arc complex on S. So really, this is like the set of multi-arcs. A finite set of disjoint arcs, which I'll call a multi-arc. All right? So far, nothing very exciting. And so far, we haven't even used the Riemann surface structure, but we will in just a minute. Okay. A weighted multi-arc on S is a formal R plus weighted sum of disjoint arcs, which we can also think of, I'll call it X or something. So we can also think of as a map X from the support of X, which lies in this arc complex, to R plus. Right? And we write X is in the weighted multi-arc on S, which is kind of like the cone on S. If you think of A of S as the simplicial complex corresponding to this abstract arc complex, this is like the cone on it. But for our purposes, that's not really that important. Okay, there's a lot more to do. Let's see. Okay, so now extremal length. So finally, we're going to use the Riemann surface structure. And just go ahead. Extremal length, very quickly. If gamma is a family of paths on S, we let the extremal length of gamma be the soup over all rho, where rho is a conformal metric on S of the infimum of the length of gamma over all gamma in big gamma. Take this squared divided by the area of rho. Okay. And for our purposes, it's convenient to define the width of gamma, which is just the reciprocal of the extremal length of gamma, which is equal to, we can think of it as the infimum of the area of the metric. So by area, you know, I could rewrite this as the integral over S of rho squared. That is the area of the metric. We could think of it as the infimum of the areas of metric such that the length in that metric of all paths in gamma is at least equal to 1. All right? It's pretty clear these are reciprocal. And just in sort of 1 minute, I'll collect a few properties. So The basic concept is that if I have a rectangle of sides A and B, and I look at all paths going from one side to the other side, so gamma is all paths from, from left to right, then the extremal length of gamma is equal to B over A, where the extremal metric is the Euclidean metric. And just very briefly, there are these series and parallel laws. So if gamma 1 and gamma 2 have disjoint support on S, then let me do it in terms of width, because that's what I'll be using. The width of gamma 1 union gamma 2 is equal to the sum of the widths. And the width of gamma 1 plus gamma 2 is equal to what I'll write as the harmonic sum of the widths, which is the reciprocal of the sum of the reciprocals. So I'll use this notation for harmonic sum. And most of you are probably used to seeing inequalities rather than equalities. But really the point is that if... so we write... Oh, let me move over. We write gamma 1 extends gamma 2 if if for all gamma 1 in gamma 1 there exists gamma 2 in gamma 2 such that gamma 1 extends gamma 2. Okay? So a couple of words. This is a formal sum. And we can take, sum of path families, I mean add any two paths. So that the length of a sum of paths is just equal to the sum of the length. So we could generalize this family of paths to kind of chains. And gamma 1 extends gamma 2 means that for all metrics rho of gamma 1 is going to be greater than or equal to rho of gamma 2. Okay, so if this is true, so if gamma 1 extends gamma 2, then the extremal length of gamma 1 will be greater than or equal to the extremal length of gamma 2. Or likewise for extremal width. All right, that's our very brief introduction to extremal length. But this use of sum and harmonic sum will motivate what comes later. Okay, so okay, I want to describe a way of getting from these partial proper foliations to weighted multi-arcs on a Riemann surface. So if F is a partial proper foliation on S, maybe I'll call this P, so I'll write F is in P, P, F of S. So I don't have to keep spelling out partial proper foliation. And alpha is an arc on S, then and F is strictly speaking a foliation, but we can certainly think of it as a union of the images of paths, or the union of paths. I'll kind of equate a path with its image. So we let F restricted to alpha be the set of all leaves of F such that gamma, well, in other words, gamma is a representative of this arc alpha. And then we let the width of F, which is going to be an element, it's going to be a weighted multi-arc on S, to be the sum over all alpha of the extremal width of F restricted to alpha. Okay, this is an overloaded operator. It has two different uses. Times alpha. So, if, for example, we have a surface and we have these conformally embedded rectangles, we would just replace each one of these rectangles. We take each rectangle, so let's say this is conformally equivalent to some rectangle like this. We would just replace this rectangle with an arc that had this width, say, of E over A. All right. So, okay, this is a simple function. It takes this from some topological object to something that's really just defined up the homotopy with some numbers attached to it. If F is a partial proper foliation, then all the paths will be disjoint, which means that the arcs will be disjoint. So I kind of hinted at this before, right? If F is a partial proper foliation, then the support of F, which I can think of, which is equal to the set of all arcs such that the arc is in the homotopy class it's the set of all arcs, homotopy classes of leaves, in other words. This is going to be an element of this arc complex because these leaves are all disjoint. So the support of F is necessarily finite. And the support of this weighted multi-arc is going to equal the support of F, so it's finite. So even this is, although this is written as the sum over all arcs, it's just a finite sum. So in general, right, any weighted multi-arc necessarily has finite support, as long as our surface is compact. Okay. So I'm going to write a statement of a theorem that will be incomplete. Okay, suppose that S is a subset of T, R, compact Riemann surfaces. And really, it's just enough for the interior of S to be a subset of the interior of T, which is very close to the same thing, but it means that this embedding doesn't necessarily extend continuously to the boundary of S, which is important later on. And F is a partial proper foliation on T, okay? Then we can restrict this foliation to S, to S, and it will be a partial proper foliation on S. And the width of F restricted to S will have some relation to the width of F, which is sitting on T. Okay, so this is a weighted multi-arc on S, and this is the weighted multi-arc on T. And there'll be some relation between the two of these. Okay, I haven't said what that relation is, and it will take me a few minutes, but I wanted to motivate the next few minutes of definitions by trying to find what this relation is. Yes? We're not getting to the main theorem yet. We're going to talk about domination right here. Yes. Okay. Yeah, if we're lucky, I'll get to state the main theorem before the end of the hour. But I wanted to talk about these geometric techniques, because in a way they're the most interesting thing. All right. Let me draw some kind of picture of S sitting inside of T. So for example, T might look something like this. Here's T. And then S might share some of these boundary components. It might look something like this. This is S. All right. So if S is a subset of T, and alpha I is a sequence of arcs in S, and beta is an arc on T, we write this alpha I generates beta. Okay, I'll say alpha I generates beta if we can find a path B in this homotopy class. So it's a path B on S such that B restricted to S has non-trivial components A1 through AN, which will be paths on S, whose homotopy classes are equal to the alphas. All right? This is a little bit tricky. I'll draw a picture. It means if I have some path beta on T, maybe it looks something like this. If I have some path B on T, all right, I can take B and I can restrict it to S. And I'll get some, actually potentially some countable union of paths. But some of them will be trivial. All but finitely many of them will be homotopically trivial. You can homotope it to the boundary. And the remaining ones I can call A1 through AN. And then I can say that the associated arcs generate beta. All right? Sorry? No. No, maybe it's the wrong choice of notation. But I kind of used it while I was working, and I like it. No, it has nothing to do with the limit. It's really more inspired by the arrow notation in sequent calculus. It says that if we put alpha 1 through alpha n together, we get beta. Anyway, I don't think we'll be too confused by the notation in this lecture. All right, there's more definitions. So I just want, for any path B, if I restrict it to S, it'll have these finitely many non-trivial components, and I can get some kind of generation relation like this. Okay. There's finitely many non-trivial paths. Basically because S has finite topology. It's just a theorem. Yeah. Right, basically because B is proper. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay, so we say, now I want to define the domination relation, which will fit into this theorem here. So suppose X and Y, X is a weighted multi-arc on S, Y is a weighted multi-arc on T. Okay, we write X dominates Y if we can write X is the sum of Xi's, Y is the sum of Y is the sum of Vi times beta I. Okay, so Y is a multi-arc. Here I'm writing it as a sum of weighted sum of arcs. The beta I's are not necessarily distinct. They may be the same. And I need to say a little bit more here. All right, I'll just put it up here. Xi, each Xi is going to be the sum Wij alpha ij. So these are all weighted sums of arcs, and these alpha ij's may not be distinct. And for all I, these alpha ij's as a sequence in indexed by j, generates beta I, and the sum of the inverse weights here, again over J, inverse, is greater than or equal to Vi. All right, this is a mouthful. But with that definition, we can complete this theorem. We can say that this weighted multi-arc dominates this weighted multi-arc. I'll give a kind of pictorial proof of why this happens. If I concentrate on the weight of one arc in Y, so I have this foliation. I'll draw another surface, I guess. I have this foliation have the surface T, and I have some foliation. And then what may happen is that on the surface S, there are these extra holes. And then what I'm going to do is take S and kind of divide it, like for each leaf of the foliation on T, I can restrict it to S and see what kind of sequence of non-trivial paths I get. And I can divide this foliation into rectangles depending on the sequence of paths. And this division is going to give me my division of Y. Okay, so if Y just had this, if the foliation had this just a single path family, I would get three sections of it. And I take the width of each one, and then each, so this is my beta here, and then I find the corresponding, for each rectangle, I get a sequence of paths that I'm restricting to. And so I get something like alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, arrows beta. But if the weights, if the widths of these rectangles are W1, W2, W3, just of these rectangles right in here, then what I'm going to get is that the sum of these widths is bigger than or equal to the total width of this rectangle. Okay? Well, this would be something like W2J or something, and this would be V2 if this is the second rectangle. So I'm going to take the total foliation in some homotopy class, divide it kind of longitudinally by how it restricts to S, and then divide it the other way by these arcs, and I'm going to get formulas of this kind. All right. That's the first step in the outline. What's next? So, we want some foliation to apply this whole story to. So I'll define what's called the canonical foliation. Or what might be called an almost maximal foliation. So given my surface S, for any arc alpha on S, I can lift it to the universal cover. And let me draw them here. If this is A, B, if these, I call these components A and B, I can lift alpha to the universal cover. So this is, say, pi, the universal cover. And I'll have components of the sort of domain of discontinuity of this deck transformations on the boundary, that each of which are universal covers of the corresponding boundary component of alpha. And now I can uniformize this to a rectangle. All right, so I get, did I do it backwards? All right. Uniformize this to a rectangle, and I'm going to get Q of A tilde, Q of B tilde, and say two vertical lines. And I want to make normalize this so that the width height here is 1. I cut out squares. They don't look like squares, but I cut out squares of side 1. And I take the remaining vertical foliation, and I pull it back by Q, which I'll call F tilde of A tilde B tilde. And then I'll push it forward by pi, and I'll call this F alpha. And the amazing thing is that if I take a different lift of alpha, or if I take a lift of another arc, the associated foliations here will be disjoint. So the theorem is, that the union over all alpha of F of alpha is a partial proper foliation on S. And a corollary, so I'm taking out squares of side 1 on both ends. If this whole length is less than 2, there's nothing left. So this is only non-empty in the cases where this has length at least 2. So the corollary, right, is that this support is actually a multi-arc on S. So that they're only, that if I look at the arcs that lift so that I get length at least 2, there's only finitely many. All right? And just to say a word about why this theorem is true, basically, if there was another such foliation that intersected it, I'm removing kind of a buffer here. And if I put back the buffers, I'd get two path families of extremal length at most one that were intersecting, like every leaf of one intersecting every leaf of the other. And that's impossible. So that's why this theorem is true. So the claim is, F alpha is just the image of this. If I have a different lift of alpha, there's a deck transformation that compares them, and certainly the foliations will be mapped to each other because of the conformal way I've defined this. What's remarkable is that the two foliations, once I remove these squares, the two foliations will be disjoint. So the remarkable thing is that this foliation has an embedded image. But certainly, yes, certainly it's natural for the deck transformations. All right. So very quickly, a theorem on the properties of this canonical foliation. So first of all, if F from S to T is a covering, an unramified covering, then this foliation okay, this has a name. Let's call this the canonical foliation for S. And this canonical foliation for S is just going to be the pullback of the canonical foliation for T. Okay, call this statement 0 or something. Right. So also, if G is any partial proper foliation on S, then if I look at the weight of G restricted to alpha, that's going to be less than or equal to the weight of F of this canonical foliation restricted to alpha plus 2. And this has a notation here. I can call this the canonical weighted multi-arc. Okay, so this is the canonical, it's the associated weighted multi-arc of the canonical foliation. All right? And this is pretty simple because G is some set of paths homotopic to alpha. So if I had this G in the same homotopy class, I could lift it up to here and then to here, and the width of that homotopy the width of that path family is going to be at most the width of this rectangle, which is 2 more than the width of this rectangle. All right? So if I put this together with this theorem about domination, I have this kind of corollary of number one, which is if S is a subset of T, what do I want to say? So I can rewrite this statement. Can rewrite this statement just saying that the width of this canonical, this canonical weighted multi-arc on S is bigger than or equal to the width of G minus 2, where we understand this as subtract 2 from the weight of every arc and take the maximum of 0. So my corollary is that if S is contained in T, we have the width of, if I take the canonical foliation of T restricted to S, that's going to dominate the width, the canonical weighted multi-arc of T. And on the other hand, this minus 2 is less than or equal to, so this thing here, minus 2 is less than or equal to the canonical weighted multi-arc on S. Okay? And just a little arithmetic with this domination operation implies that if I take this canonical weighted multi-arc on S, it dominates the canonical weighted multi-arc on T minus 6 times the Euler characteristic of S. Right? Probably want this to be less than 0 or something. And this is basically, this is just, the point is that the number of arcs on S at most 3 times the Euler characteristic. So you take that times this 2 that you have on each one. This is at most how much you're subtracting. This is sort of the maximum amount you're subtracting total. And you can easily prove that this relation and this implies this. Okay, so in the few minutes remaining, let's talk about this main theorem. Or let's talk about some version of it. Okay. Here's this main theorem, which is a theorem about extremal length and renormalization. Okay. So suppose suppose the quadratic-like map F from U to V is primitively n renormalizable. And also n over r renormalizable. Okay? Then letting x equal this canonical weighted multi-arc for v minus the union of the small Julia sets for the n renormalization, what we have is that if we take the vertical part, so I'm going to have to define this, and then add all of the weights, that's bigger than or equal to a constant depending on r times the sum, let's say the sum of the horizontal part. All right, so let's try to do a quick couple of definitions. All right, so what does this mean? Well, I have this map, this quadratic-like map, F from U to V, and then it's n renormalizable. So I have these n small Julia sets of the renormalization. Right? Call this Kn. And I'm going to take this minus this is my Riemann surface. I can think of it as a compact Riemann surface by taking the ideal boundary here. And a vertical path is going to be a path that goes from some small Julia set to the boundary. And a horizontal path will be one that goes from some small Julia set to another small Julia set. And we could also go from the boundary to the boundary, but I'm going to ignore those. And so what I'm saying is that if I take this canonical weighted multi-arc for this surface, if I take the total weight for all the vertical paths, it's going to be a bigger than a constant, depending on R, this technical condition here, times the sum of the horizontal weights, and I left out something. There's an additive constant that depends on N. Okay? So this theorem is really only interesting if these weights are large. And the point of this, why do we care about this theorem? It's saying that if I wanted to take a renormalization at the next level, I care about the space between these small Julia sets. So I want to say, suppose I had very little space around one of the small Julia sets. It would mean I have very little space around all of the small Julia sets. So it would mean that the weight of the horizontals are going to be large, because if these are close together, then these extremal lengths are small and these weights are going to be large. And it's saying that in that case where this is large, okay, this is going to be sort of proportional, which means that if N is kind of large compared to R, then what I have is that the total vertical here is bigger than a constant times the total horizontal. So it means that I could rewrite this as a constant depending on R times N, and then divide this by N. And this is going to be a good estimate of how much space I have around one small Julia set. Like, if the space is very small, then that's going to be large. So it's saying that if this hyperbolic geodesic is long, and the length of the hyperbolic geodesic is going to be roughly its intersection number with this x, then this hyperbolic geodesic is much longer, because it's like n times longer up to this constant. All right, that's the main theorem. And there's really a half an hour's talk remaining, but how much time? Who's in charge here? How much time should I take? 5 minutes. All right. So, all right. The role of R is pretty technical. Let me save that to the end. This is a question at the end. I mean, it makes the statement true. Otherwise, I don't know if it's true. It's possible that the constant is actually independent of R. The role of R is not incredibly important, but for the theorem I'm using, we need this R. All right. So in 15 minutes, I want to say basically how we're using this, how we're going to reduce this to a combinatorial statement. So the strategy is, let's say this. So I let V sub I equal to F to the minus I of V. Okay, so I can take a sequence of restrictions, and if I took some very high restriction, it would be kind of very close to these small Julia sets. And the space between these guys gets much longer. This vertical space kind of decreases, so this width here is going to increase. So I'm going to try to find a width. So, so we show, the strategy is to prove the following theorem. that if I let that the width, if I take this vertical part of the canonical weighted multi-arc of V of some constant depending on R times this period, again minus these small Julia sets, that this is going to be bigger than say the horizontal part at the top. Okay? And the way I want to show this, this is going to be implied by a second theorem, which says that if I look at the horizontal part of the same thing, that it's, okay, let's say I want this to be bigger than one-half this. This is going to be less than one-half times the horizontal here. All right? And the idea is that this second theorem, call this A and B or something, this theorem B implies theorem A. And the idea is pretty simple, that if this is, say, V0, and I have these two small Julia sets, and this kind of foliation between them that's very wide, if I restrict to this Vn, if I restrict to some high Vi or something, that any kind of horizontal paths that are lost here are going to become vertical paths for this guy. It's like I can either lift the horizontal path directly to Vi, or it's going to become a vertical path. It's going to become two vertical paths, a vertical path here and here in this restriction. So if I lose horizontal, I have to gain it in vertical. So this statement will imply this one. All right. Then this is going to imply the main theorem. We have to say somehow that we can take this vertical here and push it forward to be vertical at the top level. But I'm going to edit that part out. That follows from the covering lemma. But I'm going to edit that out in order to talk about the main combinatorial theorem. And then, yeah. All right. So the main combinatorial theorem . So we think of this theorem B as our objective, that if we pull back many times, we're going to lose some of the horizontal weighting. This main combinatorial theorem says that, we want to take kind of the combinatorial model for F. So that will be the super-attracting, the map with a super-attracting cycle of period N. That's kind of the same as F. So, let F from C to C, Milner uses this terminology, superstable of period N, meaning it has a superattracting cycle of period N. And again, I need it to be N over R normalizable. Say BF be the immediate basin of attraction. And I want these basins to be disjoint. Okay, so I want if these are the basins around the period, the different points in the super-attracting cycle, I want the closures to be disjoint. Okay, this is just a combinatorial model. So now let Xi be elements, so Xi, say, from I equal 0 to some k of r times n, be a sequence of weighted arcs, weighted multi-arcs, on C minus the closure of this attracting basin. Okay, so the idea is that I'm just thinking of these small Julia sets as these attracting basins. I'm taking this kind of equivalent, combinatorially equivalent map for our purposes. And I'm taking the sequence of weighted multi-arcs. Okay, and then suppose that, all right, suppose that I have this kind of triangle here. So I have X, Xi is horizontal. Okay, I'm just, so each one of these arcs are going to connect two attracting basins. And suppose that, and for all I have that Xi plus 1 is less than or equal to Xi. And if I pull back Xi, I have F upper star of Xi. And now suppose that this guy dominates this one. Okay? So this here is a weighted multi-arc on C minus the inverse image of the attracting basin. So I have these extra holes, but I can kind of glue things together to get something here. Sure. Well, so the idea is there's sort of all of C, and then there's, say, three components of this basin of attraction, right? So I have one weighted multi-arc maybe looking like this. Okay, let's say this is my Xi plus 1. And, well, in this very simple picture, I have Xi, which looks the same. And then if I pull this back, I get these extra pre-images of these basins. So I get like a hole here and a hole here. So I get something looking like this. Okay, if I just pull this back by F, I get something looking like this. And now I'm saying that for each one of these arcs here, I can think of it as some concatenation of arcs here. So this arc might be a concatenation of two of these arcs here. This one might be just one here. All right? So this is the hypothesis here. Yes, yes. So I also have weights here, right? So if this is, say, I don't know, this could be 1, and there's some cool example. If this is 2, this is 3, and this is 6. So I have, say, 3 here, 6 here, and 3 harmonic sum 6 is equal to 2. So I have these weights. But just in particular, I have this topological relation where I concatenate arcs going through the extra holes. So I haven't finished the conclusion of this. The conclusion is that this whole hypothesis is going to imply that x, k of r, n, this last guy in the sequence, if I add up all of those weights, is going to be less than half X0. These should be subscripts, but oh well. So this is intended to be directly analogous to this theorem B here. And that's exactly the point, that because if we, the sort of secret window here from, the point is this main combinatorial theorem implies theorem B. Main combinatorial theorem implies this theorem B. And the basic idea is that I'm going to let xi be this canonical weighted multi-arc for vi minus the union of small Julia sets. And then what I have is, I have this, we can show this relation, because as I said, as we restrict, we kind of lose horizontal part. It tends to become vertical. And I'll just take the horizontal part here. So I'll tend to lose horizontal part, so I'll get this inequality. And this domination inequality is going to be because, right, f upper star xi, xi plus 1, which is this, f upper star xi is going to be this weighted, it's going to be a weighted multi-arc on vi plus 1 minus f inverse of kn, right, minus these extra holes. And that's going to dominate up to some factor, right? It's going to dominate this xi plus 1 minus 2. Because this, if I take this vi plus 1 here, if these are both living on vi plus 1, I'm just filling in these holes. One is a subset of the other. Okay. Yeah, it's the canonical one here, right? So it has to dominate this one, yes, because this here, this surface here, is a subset of vi plus 1 minus kn. Okay. So. I mean, there's this factor too, but there's a simple way of washing out the constants. Ah, I left out constants here. All of this is up to these constants. So these constants here just sort of appear over here. But otherwise, you get this theorem. So, so far, we've taken this main theorem and, said that it follows from this theorem B, and reduced it to this main combinatorial theorem, which is a purely combinatorial theorem about this arithmetic of weighted multi-arcs. Sorry? All right. So, just to say a few minutes about how this main combinatorial theorem follows. There's sort of two steps. So one is that okay, so under the hypothesis of this main combinatorial theorem, x sub 3n is aligned with the Hubbard tree, h sub f, of this super stable map f. So, if this Hubbard tree looks something like this, it's saying that you can basically take every arc of this horizontal weighted multi-arc and make it live kind of inside the Hubbard tree. Okay, so it's basically ruled by this Hubbard tree. I'm pulling it back a number of times. I'm doing this kind of construction, and it's going to be aligned with the Hubbard tree. And so just to finish, to answer Mitsu's question of where this R comes in. So let's take an example. So because after, some multiple of n were aligned with the Hubbard tree, we could assume that we were aligned to begin with for the purposes of this theorem. So for some example, let's say that suppose F is real, and N over 3 are normalizable. So what we're going to get is that if we look at these basins of F, they're going to come in these groups of 3. All right, sort of all aligned on the real line. And then, yeah, so R is equal to 3 here. And then our weighted multi-arc, once it's aligned with the Hubbard tree is just real. It's also just going to be a real thing. And and this may seem like a trivial example because we sort of understand real dynamics, but this is real combinatorics. It's more general than real dynamics because the parameter might not be real. So F is, now we have this weighted multi-arc that's aligned with a Hubbard tree. The idea is that, if I kind of blow this up a little bit, so this is still a single group, kind of spread out. If I take some high iterative F, I'm going to get, if I take some like F to the 8n or something like that, I'm going to get, like, I have the dynamics, I have the kind of renormalized dynamics right over here, and I'm going to get like the 8th power of that. And what's going to happen is that if I pull back by this, these arcs are going to pull back. There's going to be kind of many copies of each of these arcs. So if I have some arc X over here, then I might get, for example, 2 copies of X over here. Okay? So the weighting of these guys is going to be the same as the weighting of this in this pullback. And then I have this this domination relationship. So it means that if I'm stringing all these guys together to make this, I have to take the harmonic sum of the weights. So that's certainly going to be less than x over 2 if I add the reciprocals and take the reciprocal. It's going to be less than x over 2. So basically what we can show is that each one of these arcs, so if I have, so in other words, if I have like x, say 8n, that's dominated by f 8n upper star of x0, then what I'm going to find is that all of these guys in here are going to be harmonic sums of like many of them up here. And so I'm going to decrease by some definite factor.